Roll call.
I can just say that.
Just keep going.
Here.
Present.
We have a quorum. Okay, let's move to item one, which is the transit operations report. Mr. Mitchell.
Good afternoon, sir. And welcome to Director Wilson also. Before starting the monthly report, there's two things I did want to mention. The last September, the board approved a contract action that was the next step we needed to facilitate providing on-time, real-time information to our riders. We're calling that program a real-time next trip program, and we're going to be doing a public launch on that April 18th. Wanted to mention it today because I think the public launch is going to be before the next operations committee meeting. Wanted to mention that. We'll do it, and we'll have a fuller brief on the program later. Yes, sir.
By the way, there is a beta launch already that's available for you to use.
The second one, just want to mention that item four on the service changes, Conan will be presenting the detail on it later, but just wanted to mention that we've done a fair amount of outreach both to our employees and patrons. And talk to operators also to make sure we got as much feedback as we did before taking the actions we're going to recommend in item four. We had a good report on complaints in December. They've risen slightly to 2.53 for the month of January, but still remain below the target. We had talked several times over the last year about operator assignment ratio. We're back very close to the target that we've set. Continue convening bus operator training courses, and we'll be in good shape. We expect when we have to release some people from current Metro operations to support startup on Expo, but both bus and rail, the numbers are back where we've been trying to manage to. The scale might be a little bit misleading on this, but we're slightly ahead of year to date on actuals to a budget. January average weekday boardings on bus increased to 1,065,786 boardings, representing an increase over December by a little over 7%. Ridership in December decreases because it's a holiday and vacation month, and this year also is a heavy rainfall period, and we think that decreased boardings also. Orange Line boardings are down by a little over 9%. Typically on this line, January is lower than December because of the Valley College students are on winter break, and that ends in early February. We expect the numbers to be back in February. Rail boardings increased over 9%, and this reflects more of what we've been seeing and hearing from other properties throughout the country based upon what's been happening with gas. I mentioned last month that we had seen 4, 5, 6 weeks of improvement in on-time performance, and those weekly observations reflected here in the 77% for January. Again, the target we're working toward is 80%. It's still low, but better than we'd been doing. Again, when we reached 80%, we'll increase the target to 85, but we're on the way. This month's report on cleanliness reflects stepped-up efforts on the part of all divisions. We have a goal established of 8% on the cleanliness overall. We have some divisions meeting it, others lagging, and we're trying to understand the basis for the lags. Basically, those are the in-city divisions with a lot more traffic on those buses.
In addition to lessons learned, each of you've got Division 8 standing up.
Some of it has to do with the kind of service that that they're operating and the clientele that are using it. They have a slightly different problem than the in-city divisions. Actually, both 8 and 15. But when we did the reorganization last year to provide one person in charge of maintenance for the entire bus operation, that allowed us easily to do the kind of lessons learned you're speaking about, and that's occurring.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This reporting period here, it appears that not many of our divisions have really reached their goal in terms of cleanliness. And is the ridership up or down during the same period of time?
The ridership is up on the non-Orange Line bus. It's down on the Orange Line.
And I didn't understand the last part of what you said.
To answer your question, the ridership is down on the Orange Line, up on the other bus lines.
And so do you have any explanation as to why some divisions are more efficient or better at getting this job done than others?
It's a combination of factors, starting with the environment that the buses are.
Can you run that back to the other slide, please? Thank you. No.
Which one?
The cleanliness one. Thank you.
Divisions 1, 2, and 5 have a different problem, have a different operating environment than 8, 9, 15, and 3 for that matter also. They have a harder problem to address cleanliness and graffiti than some of the divisions that are outside the city.
So you're saying Division 1, 2, it appears 1, 2, 5, you're saying that there's more graffiti and more trash on those lines than there are
yes.
on the other?
Yes.
There are several issues that affected this month's performance. Part of it was the rain, so that affects the rating also. We are having roving crews go out and target divisions where there is high incidence or lower ratings where we see the need. We then target the roving crews to go out to those divisions and target them. But as we make the rounds, obviously, then if we don't hit them fast enough, what happens is that the rating will drop again. So we're trying to address that every month.
The rain, though, is pretty uniform, though, isn't it?
Does it go all over the region? It's uniform across, except based on the type of service that goes out of each division, they may affect each division differently.
If we have a standard, we need to apply it uniformly, and if that means for various reasons that we need to reallocate resources to reflect some of these other conditions, I think that's important to do. I think it's important that people would have the expectation of a similar standard throughout the system. So these teams that are going out on an ad hoc basis, it sounds like there's some recognition that there are different environments that may call for different resources. I think it's really important to get the cleanliness up at a system-wide level.
Will do.
Yes.
Question, do you allow adequate time for the bus driver when they have to pick up the handicap? They pick up and discharge so that when they're on their schedule, but
that does affect dwell time. Affect our on-time performance for some of those. But that's, we try to crank that into the understanding on the expected time to complete the runs. Having a number of, and actually our wheelchair boardings are up substantially where they were 5-6 years ago. That is something we have to deal with.
They are included as part of the running time. We do a lot of ride checks to make sure that we allow for those kinds of things, and based on the number of wheelchair boardings or ADA boardings that we have, the times, if necessary, we will adjust them to accommodate for that.
Do you work with the operations or the operators and the facilities that cater to the handicap for this type of information for our scheduling?
We are working with an internal department to do that, yes.
So you are?
Yes. Internally, there's an ADA group here, and they actually meet periodically with the community that you're speaking about, and so we have the benefit of feedback from that community as well as the internal employees.
Okay, thank you.
For January, the accidents per 100,000 hub miles increased slightly. It's up 2 accidents from the same period last year. The increase in January is primarily involving our vehicles, our buses being hit, particularly on the right side by other vehicles. This relates to a mean miles between mechanical failures and that did increase in January. We've been up and down over the last 6-7 years, and I've been working with maintenance to try to understand what the basis for that not being able to maintain a trend. Again, it has been up and down. Don't have a good answer for you right now.
Okay. Higher we can get that number, the better.
Yes, sir.
That's it. That's it.
Appreciate the report.
Too many questions. That's in the report.
Questions on this report? Thank you. That brings us to Agenda Item 2, which is the report on Los Angeles Metro Protective Services.
Mr. Chairman, let me remind the committee that Metro Protective Services, or LAMPS, is the rebranding of the Sheriff's Department's Transit Service Bureau and our Department of Transit Security. And that unit is commanded by Commander Patrick Jordan, who's our Transit Chief of Police. Chief Jordan had to be out of town today on family business, but he's represented here today by one of the two captains that we have in the Transit Services Bureau, Daniel Cruz. Captain Cruz,
welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members, and staff. Today I'm going to do a presentation on transit fare enforcement and our unit's, Transit Services Bureau's, enforcement methodology. As you know, the Metro system currently uses a proof of payment system that utilizes unlocked gates. Therefore, in order to affect effective fare enforcement, it requires a strategic, multifaceted approach toward identifying fare evaders. Utilizing deputy sheriffs and security assistants, we use a variety of methods to do fare enforcement. We use 100% fare operations, which means that we check all passengers, including those with tap cards. We do roving fare operations, plainclothes operations, TIU Viper. Viper stands for Visual Intermodal Protection and Response Operations, and MIST operations, mobile search and screening team operations, which are basically baggage check operations, and they are TSA recommended. We also use random individual fare operations. Now, TSB personnel have been instructed to expand the use of gate arrays and MPVs in order to accomplish this goal. Our fare evasion goal at this point is 4% system-wide and 2% at peak. If you look at our fare evasion citations, in the calendar year 2010, we issued 57,015 fare evasion citations for the entire year. In January of 2011, utilizing the MPVs, gate arrays, and other methods that I mentioned, we issued 7,242 fare evasion citations. If we continue on that track, it would put us on track to issue almost 87,000 citations for calendar year 2011. At this point, we're in the process of migrating from a proof of pay system to locked gates, utilizing smart card technology. To that end, we're utilizing the mobile phone validator MPVs, which have been implemented system wide. This enables the deputies and fare inspectors to ID offenders at gates, platforms, and trains. To date, we've issued 355. MPVs to our deputies and security assistants. Unfortunately, at this time, MPVs can only capture valid taps, so we don't really know how many valid and invalid taps the deputies and security assistants are conducting. At this point, we've initiated what's called a unit order, which makes the MPV a piece of required equipment for our deputies and security assistants, and they are required to carry it anytime they are on duty and to have it charged and make sure that it is operational. We've seen an increased usage since the pilot program on the Blue Line, and TSB personnel are embracing the use of the MPVs as evidenced by the increase in recorded valid taps. At the next slide. You can see the taps for the last, since December. We had over 2,400 in December, over 6,000 in January, and over 11,000 valid taps in the month of February. And as such, we continue to maintain a collaborative working relationship with TAP, Cubic, and other units involved with TAPS. And that includes having regular meetings to report and correct any technical problems that we may be having with the system and the software.
Blue chip stamps.
Sometimes the MPVs do have some limitations. They're slower than the old handheld validators, and it takes a while to scroll through the reader in order to determine if fare media is valid. However, we feel that would increase training, and as the employees get used to using the device, that not only will the use increase, but it will be more effective. We'll move on to saturation rates. Saturation rates, they're determined by the percentage of passengers checked versus the ridership. Now, as you can see, in 2010, our saturation rates were 13.85%. In 2011, we've placed a greater emphasis on saturation and improved the tracking systems. Our current rail saturation rate is 17.41% for the months of January and February. And it is our intention to ensure saturation remains a high priority during the transition to the smart card tap fare collection technology. As part of our strategic plan, we have implemented quarterly audits to check on our employees' performance. As such, we conducted two separate six-hour fare operations on all the rail lines, including the Orange Line, in October. We determined that the 2010 fare evasion rates were 1.45 for uniform fare evasion operations, and 1.79 for plain calls fare evasion operations. The next audit was conducted in January of this year, and our fare evasion rates were 1.31 and 1.29, respectively. The next audit is scheduled for April of this year. And these serve as a checks and balance for our administration to verify the work reported by deputies. And they also serve to determine fare evasion rates at any particular location during a specific period of time. Next one. We also have some TAP challenges. One of the biggest challenges is educating the public on the requirement to TAP. You know, oftentimes customers will buy fare media that are either day passes or monthly passes, and they may not feel the need or they forget to TAP. We recommend a large-scale public awareness campaign, which includes Metro employees. Also, some of the other challenges are identifying the different fare medias that we use, including the TAP, TVM, paper monthly, weekly, daily, school, and MetroLink passes. These can be a challenge to verify it on any given day. As such, we have ongoing training for TSB personnel, and we have a team approach with Metro toward smart cart technology and lock gates. And we're confident that we can effectively tackle any problems that arise during the transition. Questions on the smart card technology and fare enforcement?
I'd just like to indicate that...
Do you give citations out to people who have the fare media but they didn't TAP?
It depends on the situation. Sometimes we get repeat offenders, and we will cite those people. At present, we are not citing if it's a first time offense, because we are waiting for the public awareness campaign.
And how long a period of time do you think you need for this public awareness outreach?
Sir, as far as the first question goes, if somebody has a weekly or monthly pass that's actually valid, that's a difficult situation because technically they're not evading fare. And the sections on the books actually call for people that are evading fare to be cited. So I think the option at this point is for us to continue to warn people to TAP. If somebody has a valid pass, and when I say valid, I mean monthly or weekly, that's been paid for up front, not the stored value, it's our intention to continue to educate them to TAP. The people who have a stored value who fail to TAP, whether daily, weekly, or monthly, those people are cited immediately. So am I clear enough to distinguish between the two?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to...
But I didn't hear the second part, and that was how long of outreach period do you think you will need to really properly inform the public?
I think once we get a campaign started, maybe, 30 days or so? 30 or 60 days?
Yeah.
We'll probably have it up by May.
But the other thing we're hearing is that you're citing immediately anyway for stored value. Is that right?
For stored value if they have not tapped.
And even with the education campaign, if their monthly or weekly passes, you probably can't cite even with an education campaign.
Technically, it's a violation. And once we do the public awareness campaign, I think we would be justified in citing people who don't TAP, who have monthly passes.
What would technically, if they're not evading fare, what is the statute that they're cited under?
It's a violation of fare media. I can look up the statute for you.
Okay, but there is something that does indicate that it has to be used properly. It's not just...
Yes, it's an improper use of a TAP card, basically.
Okay. Additional questions?
Okay. We will be putting out a written report on this subject that will be comprehensive so everybody can be up to speed on it. And I'd just like to point out for Director Wilson's benefit that a month or two ago there was a lengthy discussion about the potential for locking the gates and taking full advantage of the technology that's there. And we're working on a report to come back to the board at a few a near future meeting to lay out some options for proceeding to lock the gates, at which point there would be much less of an ambiguity about it.
Sure. Yeah, wonderful.
Just a follow-up question based on something your earlier part of your PowerPoint. I think you mentioned that your goal is 1.2 something, and there's another percentage during peak time. That's your goal, but what's the reality?
Hold on a second.
I think it has to do with the ferry vision.
Right. No, I think the reality is under 2%, and we want to keep it under 2%. Now, you know, in other parts of the country, it's 4%. It averages about 4%. We want to try to keep it under 2%. I mean, I think we've been pretty successful in doing that up until now.
So the reality, I'm having a little problem hearing you, and I'm sorry, I'm going to follow up. I think you said the reality is it's actually 2%, and your goal is to keep it below that, and that the nation average is 4%. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, during peak periods, nation average is approximately 4%. We want to keep it, at this point, we're keeping it right around 2% based on the audits that we do and the fair operations we do. So we want to keep it below 2%.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'll just say right now, I appreciate that it seems to be we're making more use of the technology that we have out there. There's probably still a few glitches, it sounds like, that need to be worked out, but the numbers seem to have ramped up substantially from what we discussed a few months back, and we'll see if that's a leveling off now or if we'll continue to monitor whether the technology is being used to its full capacity to match the deployed resources as well. So it is a good sign.
We're seeing more valid taps, so that's a good thing. That means more people are paying their fares.
Excellent.
I'll go on to the second half of the presentation.
Go ahead.
Recently, we've been working with LAPD and sometimes hand in hand, and we're trying to establish a footprint in the city. Most of our fixed assets, most of our stations run underneath the city of Los Angeles, so we've conducted outreach to the Los Angeles Police Department and to the Long Beach Police Department in order to develop a collaborative or working relationship with them. So beginning with Hollywood, this year and every year, we work hand-in-hand with LAPD on planning the Academy Awards. We were invited this year to several pre-planning meetings, which I believe is unprecedented, and we made some significant contacts with their department. Additionally, we've been meeting with the Hollywood bid and collaborating with LAPD regarding the Hollywood area red line stations. And those have been very successful, and we have made a lot of inroads into those areas and into LAPD. Next slide. With the Rampart and Central area, we've developed a very good working relationship with LAPD to deal with issues surrounding MacArthur Park vendor and quality of life issues. And we recently worked with LAPD plans related to the officer-involved shooting commission ruling that was announced on March 15, 2011. They included us as part of their operational plan. And we are planning future meetings with lead officers regarding sharing all kinds of crime information and crime trends with LAPD. Next slide, please. With respect to the Gold Lines, we have conducted regular meetings with LAPD, South Pasadena Police Department, to discuss crime-related matters on the Gold Line passing through their reporting districts. And we recently conducted a tabletop exercise with the California Highway Patrol, South Pasadena, Pasadena Fire, to role-play a train derailment onto the freeway. That was very successful, and we came up with we identified a lot of tactical and operational issues during that exercise. Long Beach Police Initiatives. On the Blue Line, we worked with the Long Beach PD on a safety enforcement operation on February 7th. The Long Beach Police Chief was in attendance along with Metro Board President, LA County Supervisor Don Kanabi, and the operation was viewed as a major success by LAPD and Metro. And we continue to work with the Long Beach Police Department on enforcement issues on board and around the trains. Actually, we're working on a trial project, and we've loaned out two of our MPV devices to Long Beach Police Department for use by their officers, and that is working very, very well. And any questions on the initiatives with the various police departments?
You know, given what happened a few days ago in Japan with major disaster from earthquake and then from the tsunami and then the issues with the radiation and the like, has your department began to talk or have you had discussions with these various other policing agencies in the county about how they will respond in the event of a major earthquake, a natural disaster, a terrorist act? Do you have ongoing meetings or are you working on a plan of action in the event that something like this happens?
Well, we haven't specifically discussed the incident that happened in Japan, but we do have ongoing meetings with LA County Fire, LA City Fire, and various other police agencies regarding unified command and coordinated responses to different types of emergencies. But this is since this is such a this is an issue du jour, you know, at the moment it's constantly in the news. I believe that we will be sitting down with them in order to perhaps conduct a tabletop exercise in order to see what comes out of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't really speaking to that particular incident and whether you were reacting to that one. You know, I know that, you know, this is an earthquake-prone region of the world. And, you know, we have lots of riders. We have over 1 million riders a day. And I just wondered if there are plans in place already, irrespective of what happened a few days ago, where I know you have mutual aid agreements with other departments and fire, paramedics, and the like. I just wondered if there is any kind of a plan, evacuation process, or how to divert riders in our system from one part of the system to the other in the event of an emergency of that level and magnitude.
Yes, we do have emergency action plans available, which we can utilize in the event of just about any natural or man-made disaster.
Deputy CEO has some...
Yes, Director Wilson, we do have on staff an emergency preparedness manager who is planning a report, in fact, to this committee next month on exactly our emergency preparedness plans and his work with all of the entities in the region, in fact, the transportation agencies as well as the response agencies, on the role that Metro would play in the event of a disaster. We have the largest resources in terms of transportation of large amounts of people, so we're working with all the other bus operators and rail operator in the region to figure out exactly who will do what in the event of different kinds of emergencies.
Okay. Well, then I'll defer my comment until we have that presentation, but thank you.
Thank you. Are there more questions from the board?
Pardon?
Are there any more questions from the board?
I think we're okay. I think I certainly appreciate the report, a lot of good information, and we'll go to public comment on this item.
Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Roman.
Good afternoon, board members. Want to raise a few, I think, important concerns. The first one is financial, which is how much is it costing this agency to pay the sheriff's department to provide fair enforcement, and then versus how much money is actually saved in terms of the amount of fare evasion that's prevented. I think probably if you look at the numbers, you'll see this is a pretty big waste of money. As Director Katz has pointed out with regard to the gates, it doesn't pencil, right? $90 million for the gates. They may be locked at some point, they may not be. Then what it looks like is you've raised fares, you're paying the sheriffs to enforce fare evasion, you have a minor decrease in fare evasion. But then very poor people in this county, overwhelmingly people who just can't afford to pay the fare, don't have $1.50, get stuck with a $250 ticket or whatever the fine is. I don't know how much it is. It's a disturbing trend. It's punishing the wrong people. It's wasting the agency money. I urge you to take a second look at it.
Thank you. Let's move to item 3, and this is the authorization for the CEO to execute the option to the sheriff's contract for another year. I'm going to ask for a quick report on this, and if it will also reflect any action taken at, for information in terms of what happened in the executive.
That executive management committee approved the report that will be given very briefly right now by Dwayne Martin.
Excellent.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I certainly want to thank Captain Cruz for his report. I think it certainly endorses my request to you today. This is a request respect to the Transit Community Policing Services. The action would be to authorize the CEO to execute option one of the MOU, the PS2610 LASD. The recommendation is to authorize the CEO to intent to exercise option number one with the Sheriff's Department to provide law enforcement services for the period covering July 1st, 2012 through June 30th, 2013. FY12 is the third year of the three-year contract, and then there's two option years. We're talking about the first option year, FY13, next year. And the reason is, the rationale behind that is, pursuant to the MOU, LASD shall provide Metro with no less than 9 months advance written notice in the event LASD does not agree to extend the term of the agreement for any option year, provided, however, the Metro has given written notice to LASD prior thereto that Metro exercises its option. So basically, this is more of a technical issue than a monetary issue. We need to have the timeline in place if you do decide to go out with an RFP in order to satisfy what we need to do with that.
Okay, I'll ask, are there questions by members of the committee, or is there a motion? Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? Motion, second to approve the extension. Any discussion or objections? So ordered.
Thank you, sir.
Item 4 is a request before us to approve the service changes to Tier 1 bus lines scheduled to be implemented effective June 26th of 2011 and also proposed changes to bus lines upon the future opening of the Expo line. We'll have the report.
Conan Chung and Scott Page will provide that report.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Conan Chung, DEO of Service Development. With me I have Scott Page, Manager of Service Planning. I just want to start off by reviewing our service change philosophy for June. What we're really trying to do is continue to move towards a more coordinated, integrated, and less duplicative service in terms of the Metro bus system. And we're hoping that that will allow us to be more efficient and it'll make the system more manageable. When we do that, we can help to improve the service quality and make the system more simple and intuitive. We've been doing this over the last couple service changes, and I think we've been seeing some positive results. As Mr. Mitchell mentioned earlier, our on-time performance has improved over the past year and a half. It's gone up about 7.4%. Our mean miles between failures have gone up by 5%, and we've seen our customer complaints come down quite a bit as well. There's four elements to the June changes. Number one is to simplify, reduce duplication, and to improve coordination with municipal operators as well as local return operators. We have an opportunity to streamline some services on the Harbor Transitway. The Metro Rapid Program has been in place for about a decade now, and there's opportunities now to right-size that system. And, of course, we want to get ready for the Expo Rail program. Before I get into the service changes themselves, I wanted to take a minute and talk a little bit about the outreach. We did conduct a fair amount of public hearings. We normally do 5 public hearings. This time we actually conducted another one. We did that in this building and had more of a regional focus on that one. We distributed over 100,000 take ones. We took the show on the road. We went out to about 7 different locations throughout the county to be able to provide the information to the public instead of asking them to come to us to talk. We took their comments. We provided information to them on what our service changes were. We provided information on the buses as well as on our website. One other thing that we did is Mr. Leahy convened a group of transit advocates to look over the details of the service change program, and we were able to incorporate some of that feedback as well. Overall, we received about 400 comments, and we did take that to heart, and we made changes to the program as a result of that. In terms of the changes that we made to the program, our original program was about 400,000 hours of reduction, or it equated to that. Right now, the program was reduced about 25% to about 305,000 hours of reduction. And you can see here on the slide that some of the line cancellations that we originally proposed, we took off the table. We took five proposals off the table completely overall, three of which were the Tier 1 services. And we also reduced some of the line truncation proposals that we had. The first element in terms of simplifying, reducing, and duplicating, reducing duplication and better coordination, we go through the system and try to identify lines where we have parallel local services within a quarter to a half mile in either direction. We consider that the same corridor, and we want to make sure that we consolidate that service and right size it according to what the demand is. We also analyze routes and route segments that are duplicated by other bus and rail services. And as a result, we came up with four Tier 1 services that we're proposing for some modification. The Harbor Transit Way, we currently have three services that run basically parallel from Artesia Transit Center to downtown. We have the 445, the 450X, and the Silver Line. There's an opportunity now to consolidate the 445 and the 450X so that we would basically run the 450X as a service from San Pedro all the way to downtown during the peak hours. And during the midday and on weekends, we would have that service go from San Pedro to Artesia Transit Center and provide a time transfer to the Silver Line to provide service all the way to downtown. Next, in terms of right-sizing the Metro Rapid corridors, the Rapid program has a benefit to corridors where you have people who do make a lot of long-distance trips because it does provide faster service through a reduced number of stops and also through signal priority. However, when we create the Rapid services, we did take some of the local and limited trips and converted them into Rapids, so you have less service at those local stops. You also have a difference in the speed between the Rapid service and the local service, which results in inconsistent headways along the route. So we want to take a look at the trade-offs between having a faster service and the requirement to have a faster service versus having more access. And the following four lines during the time periods that are mentioned up there, it appears that those four lines would be better served with more local service and eliminating the Rapid service on those corridors, either because we don't have enough of a speed advantage or we don't have a distinct longer distance travel market. And finally, when we look at changing services to better integrate with the rail program, we want to discontinue or reduce competing duplicative services. And we also want to divert parallel and intersecting services to the new rail stations. So this program here does that for the Expo Light Rail project. We did conduct a Title VI analysis of the program. Virtually, we looked at the areas where we had disproportionate adverse impacts based on the service changes, and all of them can be mitigated by alternative services, as noted in the board report. So with board approval, the service changes would be in effect on June 26 or later. Please note that the Expo changes will not be made until the Expo line comes online. And one note on the Expo bus rail interface plan is that although two of the service councils approved the program, the South Bay Council actually requested that we delay the bus changes for 3 months. However, if we do delay the bus changes for 3 months, we should not expect to see the ridership on the Expo to be at the levels we would expect until 3 months after operations. And that concludes my report.
No, I have a quick question. There's an attachment B that also includes some Tier 2 services. Is that part of this recommendation as well?
No, the Tier 1 services are part of this recommendation. The Tier 2 and Tier 3 changes are there for information. Those have been approved through the regional service councils.
Okay. Questions by members of the committee? I know we have public input as well on this recommendation. Are there questions first?
Chair, I have some questions.
Yes, Director Wilson.
Sir, I didn't know, get your name.
Conan Chung.
Mr. Chung? Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you go back to the slide that talked about your evaluation criteria, how you came up with your recommendations?
Which slide, sorry? I'll go through them slowly and then you can tell me when to stop. Is this the beginning?
This okay. One? This is a part of it, and there was another one again.
This one?
Yes. Can you kind of give us your philosophy on your department, whomever it is that came up with these recommendations for this part of your mission?
Sure. What we do is we look at services in several different ways. We want to make sure that we're creating an integrated network that people can use. Here in LA, we have what we call many-to-many travel patterns. People come from all over the network, and they want to go all over the network all times of the day. So we don't want to create individual routes that are catered to specific groups. We want to create a network that people can use. That's speaking to the integration aspect of this. We want to make sure that people can transfer from one bus line to another bus line or from a bus line to the rail program. We have a lot of municipal operators out there now, as well as local return operators. Over the last 20 years, they've grown substantially, and we want to make sure that we're not duplicating with their services. And what we've seen is that even though they've grown substantially, we haven't really contracted at that same level, so we have some duplication of services there. The Blue Ribbon Committee, it was a committee that we put together about a year or so ago. We brought together key stakeholders, which included transit operators, governance council members, as well as riders of the system. We asked them to come up with a strategic vision for the system, and a lot of these aspects speak to what their recommendations are. A more efficient and manageable system, even though we're reducing the number of service hours that, or we're proposing to service hours out there, we're not looking at reducing our supervision staff on street. We're not looking at reducing our maintenance staff. So our ratios per bus and per service hour will go up. And as a result, that's why we're seeing our performance improve, as I mentioned earlier. Again, better service quality. The quantity of the system doesn't equate to the quality of the system. Again, we can run a much higher quality, tighter system than we can if the system's too large for us to be able to manage efficiently. And then simple and easy, intuitive to use. Again, these were ideas that the Blue Ribbon came up with. They wanted to make sure that people can use the system easily. You shouldn't be a rocket scientist to be able to take the bus.
So overall, the recommendations that you're asking us to support, your overall mission is it to save money? What is it to do?
Now, the overall mission is to move towards this vision. It's to rationalize our bus system based on what our current demands are. As Mr. Mitchell mentioned earlier, we saw on the slides, we do see a decline in the bus ridership, and we want to make sure that we're right-sizing our capacity to that. We want to make sure that we're using our buses as efficiently as possible. When we compare ourselves to our peer agencies, we carry about 51 passengers per service hour on the system on average. If you look at Chicago and New York and Philadelphia and so forth, they're on average carrying about 55 passengers per hour. So we have a little bit of ways to go to get to that productivity, that performance level that they're currently averaging. With this program, we'll get to about 53 passengers per hour, so it moves us in that direction.
If you compare, for example, those other authorities, as you just did, do they have other muni operators supporting them, as you're saying that our service area has?
Some of them do have municipal operators. They're all, everyone's slightly different throughout the country, but we do have a fair amount of muni operators that have grown substantially again over the last 20 years.
So you really can't comment on whether they're, as you're comparing them, which you did, to what we have, whether those other areas have the number or the, in terms of service hours or whatever, of muni operators that are kind of augmenting and supporting the main system?
Well, you can compare it because the passengers per hour number would be a performance number along the particular lines. We wouldn't compare ourselves in terms of how many hours we should have relative to New York. New York is substantially larger, but their square area is a lot smaller than us. But, you know, their demands are different. Other operators in that area are different. So we don't compare ourselves in terms of those types of numbers. But when you bring it down to a per unit performance metric, you can compare against the other operators.
And you're mainly talking bus now, right? Not
correct.
Bus and rail.
Correct. This is related to bus.
Is there any place in your evaluation as you make these decisions to become more efficient, more manageable, simple, that transit dependency for a region or transit dependency for a community, is that a part of any of these recommendations at all?
Yeah, definitely. We want to make sure that we don't strand anybody. When we went through our program, as I mentioned earlier, we had probably a program that equated to about 400,000 revenue service hours of change. Because of the comments that we received from the public, we reduced that substantially. And some of the lines that we were proposing to cancel, even though they may have alternative services within a quarter mile or a half mile, we decided to maintain services during key times of the day to allow people to have that mobility that they needed. It's sort of a trade-off, a give and take with the public, where we would maintain some service out there and they would adjust their schedules to be able to take that service. But that way people don't get stranded.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple other questions, but I don't want to dominate. I'm sure my friend here.
You can take mine.
Take your question. Okay, so let me just make sure I got it right. So there was an element of transit dependency in your recommendations.
Yeah. We look to make sure that we do not strand patrons.
And did you take topography into play at all? For example, if you have some areas that are more hilly, and it may be, although it may be a quarter of a mile walk to the nearest line that goes that direction, that quarter of a mile can make a big difference for those who are elderly or those who have children or those who are ADA passengers?
Yeah, and in fact, there was one line up in the San Fernando Valley that went up through Kenneth Road, which is a small hilly area in Glendale. Even though we don't have high ridership there and we have a circuitous routing through that area, based on the comments that we received, people said they can walk down the hill to the bus, but they can't really walk up the hill. So we decided to maintain that service out there, again, even though we have low productivity on that portion of the line.
Thank you. I believe you said there was going to be some savings as a result of us running this duplicate service. Can you tell us what kind of savings and where those dollars are going?
Yeah, right now we're looking at about 305,000 revenue service hour savings, which equates to about a gross savings number of about 32.2 million. However, we're proposing to reinvest about 9 million of that savings. So our net savings would be 23.2 million. From this program.
And has anybody talked about where those net savings are going to go, where they're going to, where it's going to get reinvested?
We've made reference to some of that previously, and this is a time to bring it back. The intention is that, again, the focus is on quality, not just quantity, and we recognize some issues we've had on cleanliness, on maintenance. And instead of cutting the resources on the maintenance and cleanliness and on-street supervision side that would be commensurate with these reductions, we're maintaining that employment, and we'll use those resources to do a better job, a smaller fleet of buses, a smaller number of buses to try to track and provide supervision on the street. On and a fewer number to have to do deep cleaning on.
Have you gone through, Ms. Mitchell, have you gone through per division? Because in your previous report, there was an item that talked about bus cleanliness. Have you gone through the savings and where you're going to invest these dollars to look back through those divisions, for example, that have a track record, at least the last reporting period, of not being so clean, that you're going to actually invest X number of dollars into those divisions to make sure that everybody has a clean bus?
That will be part of the discussion, as well as divisions are based upon the fleet type that's at a given division, whether we have adequate resources to support them. The articulated buses are more problematic in terms of both the cleanliness and the maintenance requirements on those. And we understand which divisions have the RTICs, which have the 45-footers. 45-footers tend to be more reliable. The intention is we will use the intelligence you're speaking about to make good decisions on where to redeploy manpower.
Will you be prepared to come back before this committee with how you're using those dollars?
Sure, if that's the committee's desire, we can do that.
Okay, and can you speak to the various lines that you're proposing to eliminate? Can you get your graph back up and talk about those, please?
This one here, the 26. Actually, Scott, you want to go through these?
Sure.
What's the frequency on that line now? What's the headway?
Twenty-six is running about 6 minutes to 25 minutes during the peak hours, and about 20 to 30 minutes during the base day.
Weekday,
and it runs.
I was going to say, however, that is along 7th Street. Then we run the least frequent portion of that up Virgil Street based on demand. I'll pull up a map so you can look at the... What we see here on the map is the boardings and alightings in the route of Line 26. Line 26 runs from downtown Los Angeles along 7th Street and then goes up Virgil to Hollywood Boulevard at Vermont. This particular line, as you can see, the big round circle at the bottom is basically where the line has most of the people are getting off the bus there at Alvarado and the Westlake area. And what we propose doing is extending line 51 and 52, which is also on top of line 26 on 7th Street, over to the Vermont Red Line station.
Do you have a pointer that you can use on this?
Oh.
Thank you. And can you start back over so I'll know where you're really talking?
The red and the blue line here is 7th Street. And also on 7th Street is line 51, 52, 352, and line 26. I've lost my mouse again. Here we go. At this particular point right here is the largest number of ons and offs. And then we have, which is basically the Westlake Alvarado area, at the Westlake Alvarado. I lost my pointer again. And at that point, then, we have limited service up Virgil. And as you can see, the ons and offs are very small. There's only about 402 patrons out of 14,000 boardings that would be forced off of the bus there. But what we plan to do is to extend the 51 and 52, which is on 7th Street, over to the Vermont Red Line station, which is this red line right here. There people can transfer to either the 204 or the 754, it's our rapid on Vermont, or they may transfer also to the Metro Red Line to go north up to Hollywood. Here we go, up Vermont to Hollywood right here. Now, those people that did have destinations up in this area, they can take Line 10, which is the Temple Street bus, also from downtown Los Angeles up to this point if they had destinations in this portion of the line. And this area right here is our quarter-mile radius to the east or west of that line. Vermont is just a little over a quarter of a mile. I'm sorry? Right. The patronage is of 402 patrons northbound and 398 southbound. As you can see, the patronage is very, very heavy on 7th Street, but once it gets to Virgil Avenue, the patronage is very light.
Are there schools and hospitals and things like that along that area?
I'm not sure about any schools along there. There's a school at Beverly and First, but I can't really say if there are any other schools.
Yeah, if there are those types of destinations and people are using the system to get to those destinations, then they would show up on the ridership impact. And those bubbles, for point of reference, represent the total ons and offs at each of the stops. the blue being the ons and the sort of pink-purple color being the offs.
And was there weekend service on that line as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, that service that we were directing them to, would they also be able to get weekend service?
Oh, absolutely. Vermont has much better service than Virgil. In fact, when the Red Line opened and when we started the Metro Rapid, the 26 line used to be a really heavy-duty line. It had great patronage. But over time, people have migrated from Virgil over to Vermont and over to the Red Line because the services was so much more frequent. And they could get up a north and south on Vermont and then go east into downtown on the Metro Red Line. So over time, the ridership has greatly fallen on Virgil.
And if they were to take, for example, the Metro Rapid on that line, the Metro Rapids don't stop as frequently, right?
They don't stop as frequently, but in this particular area, they stop almost as frequently. We stop at all the major east-west streets, even on the western Metro Rapid. Because of the area, it's so dense, and that the streets blocks are so short in this particular area, we stop very frequently in this area, as compared to south of the 10 freeway on Vermont, where the stops are much further apart. But we also have the 204 line on Vermont, which stops at all the local stops on Vermont.
Okay. And with respect to the on-time arrivals and departures, these changes, what are they going to do to those indicators, those numbers?
The changes that we're proposing, some of them are to improve on-time performance. I did also have a slide up there that showed that we were speaking with our bus operators at each of the divisions. They're the frontline employees out there driving the route, so we get information from them in terms of where we have poor on-time performance issues. Some of what we've done here is that when we look at the total service hour reduction of 305,000 hours, that's really a net because we do take some of the resource savings and reinvest into running time improvements where we need them. And also on some of the lines, for example, this one, when we cut a portion, a tail segment off of the line, it shortens the line, which allows us to have a better opportunity to be on time. The longer the line is, the harder it is to be online on time from end to end.
Thank you.
Next one's a 71 line.
All right. Line 71 operates from Cal State LA to downtown Los Angeles, with the majority of the service terminating at 7th and Olive. In this particular case, we're proposing to terminate the midday Saturday and Sunday trips at Cesar Chavez and Alameda Street. And that would be right here by us, by Union Station. The ridership in the midday and on Saturdays and Sundays is the weakest ridership on Line 71 because it is also paralleled by Line 70, which is this purple line right here. And in the downtown area, it is completely duplicated by Line 78 and 79, which operates on the Grand Olive Corridor. So people can either transfer or take the 70 line along here. And the 70 line will continue all the way through downtown to approximately Venice Boulevard right here by the 10 freeway. Or they can transfer here to the 78 or the 79. They can also transfer to the 704, which goes by here to get over to further west on Cesar Chavez, or they can transfer to the Metro Red Line.
217 is next.
I have the 96. Oh, that's right. These are...
You have all of them.
Okay, line 217 operates from our Washington Fairfax Transit Hub up Fairfax and across Hollywood Boulevard with limited service over to Vermont. Again, once the Red Line opened and we also created line 780, which is our Metro Rapid on Hollywood Boulevard, the ridership on line 217 east of Vine, Hollywood and Vine right here, has diminished. As you can see also, there's heavy ons and offs at Vine, heavy ons and offs at Western, and heavy ons and offs at Vermont, which happen to be Red Line stations. So therefore, we're proposing that we will eliminate or discontinue the limited service that we have along here now. People can transfer to either our Line 70, 780, our 180, our 181, or our Metro Red Line over to Vermont, where the line terminates today.
And 570.
Our last Tier 1 service is Line 577. This is a demonstration line we put in approximately 5 to 7 years ago, which operates from El Monte Station all the way over in the San Gabriel Valley, along the 10 freeway to the 605 South, stopping at the Norwalk Metro Green Line Station, stopping again at the Cerritos Mall, continuing on the 605 and over to the VA hospital here in East Long Beach. This is 7th Street in Long Beach. 7th Street is served by five Long Beach transit lines, which run very frequently. When we originally started this line, it actually ended here at the VA, but we decided to do a demonstration on this line and operate it from the VA over to downtown Long Beach right here. The ridership, as you can see, is very strong at the Norwalk Green Line station. It's building at Cerritos. The majority of the people get off here at the VA hospital, and there's very light ridership at the three stops we have to downtown. And we attribute that, of course, to the competing services that currently operate on 7th Street in Long Beach. So our proposal is to return to our previous terminal that we had 2 years earlier and again discontinue the service or terminate it right here at the VA hospital.
The 445 and the 450X proposal, we spoke in a little bit more detail earlier, where we're streamlining, we're combining those services. Did you want to go through the Metro Rapid as well? We can do the Rapids.
Okay.
The Rapid, the first one is the 751.
Mm-hmm. Line 751, I apologize for the map being sideways, but north is to your right. Line 751 is our Soto Metro Rapid, which starts down here in Huntington Park at Palm and Seville and goes up Long Beach Boulevard. It works its way via gauge over to Soto Street and goes all the way up Soto Street on the east side of Los Angeles, all the way up to Cypress Park by our Division 3, which is right over here. As Conan mentioned, we were reviewing our Metro Rapid lines to determine if they were operating as they were originally implemented via various criteria that we established when we started the program in the year 2000. One of them was to look at the boardings per revenue service hour to see if it achieved our current standards that we have. Boardings per hour should be 39 or more, or 80% of the local bus boarding. That the round-trip travel time reduction was 20% or more, meaning that the Rapids were actually going faster, 20% faster than the local bus, and that the trip length ratio was at least 1.25% longer than the standard line 251, which is our local bus on Soto Street. And as you can see, the trip length ratio is only 1.02. It's right at almost what the local bus is. So therefore, that tells us that the local patron or the Rapid patron is taking whichever comes first at the existing Rapid stops. They're also not traveling very far at all either. They're traveling just about as far as the local patron travels. So they're not really utilizing the Metro Rapid program in the way in which it was established. And that was to travel much further and that the bus would also travel much faster.
And on Soto Street also, when you look at both the 251 and the 751, the 751 is only 25% of the ridership on the entire corridor. So the vast majority of people are using the local service, which is the 251, because, as Scott mentioned, the average trip lengths are fairly short.
Line 757 is our Metro Rapid bus on Western Avenue. It starts at the south at the Metro Green Line station, works its way up Western Avenue, and ends up in Hollywood here at Gower Street. Again, focusing on the red here, the boardings per revenue service hour were good, but the round-trip travel time was very poor. As you can see on Saturday and Sunday, even daily, it's not even close to 20%. In some cases, it's barely makes half of 20%. The trip length ratio, again, is less than 1.25 on Saturday and Sunday, which tells us that the people aren't riding very far on it. They could probably better utilize more frequent local stop service instead of waiting for whatever comes first and getting on it. It tells us that they're really not planning their trip around whether they take a Rapid or a local. They're just boarding the first bus that comes along. So what we're proposing, though, based on the public hearing and the public outreach that we had, is that we create a new limited stop service in the peak period. They told us they really still wanted faster service in the peak period, so we would operate line 307 on the exact route of the 757, still serving the Metro Green Line station. And then in the base period, line 207 on select trips would still go over to the Green Line station to provide that connection. Currently today, local Western Avenue patrons don't have that connection to the Green Line, so that'll be a new added bonus for our Western Avenue local patrons stations, they'll actually be able to get to the Crenshaw Green Line station. And basically, it'll provide more uniform service along Western Avenue. Right now, the 757 and the 207 are not scheduled together, so it should reduce bunching, and it should also reduce the amount of time they have to wait for a bus.
And this is an example, when you look at the round-trip running time being only 9% faster. You know, the whole idea on the rapid is that you would wait for a rapid because it would be faster to get to your final destination, and you would allow the local to pass by you. But if it's only going 9% faster and you have to wait a few minutes for the rapid, you're never going to catch up to that local, so people generally take the first bus. And that's why we want to consolidate the services basically onto the same line and then rationalize the headway so that it's even along the entire corridor.
Line 760 operates also from eastern Los Angeles and works its way south on Santa Fe here. Actually, it starts in downtown and works to eastern Los Angeles. And then it goes down Santa Fe into Huntington Park on Pacific and works its way south all the way over to the Artesia Green Line station. So what we're proposing on Line 760 is that we discontinue the Saturday Metro Rapid service. We maintain the daily, as you can, I'm sorry, the Sunday, not the Saturday. We'll reduce the, get rid of the Sunday service. As you can see, it does real well on daily and Saturday. It almost meets the 20% on Saturday, but on Sunday it's close to a little more than half of the round-trip travel time reduction. Also, on the trip length ratio, Sunday is the poorest performer. Again, it tells us that the Sunday patron is really preferring to take whatever comes first. They're not willing to wait for the rapid bus, and therefore we'll be able to give them, again, more uniform and a little more frequent service on the local bus than what they have today at those stops. Line 794 operates from downtown Los Angeles out San Fernando Road all the way up to Sylmar. Whoops, up this way to Sylmar. looking at the criteria, we plan to cancel the weekend service. We operate daily service and we plan to maintain the daily service of Line 794. This is just the weekend service that we're proposing to eliminate. The boardings per revenue hour are actually less than the local. It needed to be at least 39, which is 80% of the local patronage. So it has very low patronage on the weekends. It does not achieve the round-trip travel time of 20%. Again, it's very low. The only area that it does do well in is the trip length ratio. The people are riding a little further. Obviously, the distance between the stops is fairly long, but also the route is very, very long. But the round-trip travel time reduction is so low that the people, if they wait for the rapid, they're really not benefiting by waiting for it because they probably would have already been there on a local bus. So again, we will maintain the daily Metro Rapid service. Now, on Saturdays, Line 94 will be extended to the Sylmar station. Currently, the Metro Rapid bus on weekdays goes to Sylmar, where Line 94 does not. It ends at Lancashire. So therefore, we would, on Saturdays and Sundays, Line 94 would cover this portion up to the Sylmar station. So no one will be left without service from downtown Los Angeles out to Sylmar on Saturdays and Sundays.
And this is a case where we do want to make sure that the system is, you know, has that connectivity, that integration, because we actually do have service that goes up to Sylmar on the 224, but there's the location where the two lines come together is really not a good transfer location. So instead of requiring people to transfer at that little triangle street corner, we're taking the line all the way up so that people don't have to deal with that inconvenience there.
Went to the bus route. Okay. Just briefly to refresh you regarding the Expo line, we're focusing on the Crenshaw station, and we're focusing on the Western station, and we're focusing on the end of the line at Culver City in our bus rail interface plan, as well as we're focusing on our line 102, which operates on Exposition Boulevard, paralleling most of the line in this particular area. First is Line 42, which starts at LAX. It comes up through Inglewood. It comes across to Western Avenue on Martin Luther King, and then it ends and then it goes on to downtown Los Angeles via Broadway and Martin Luther King. Now, also on Martin Luther King, we have Line 40, which also operates in this particular area. Our proposal is to take Line 42 up to the Western Expo Station, where they can transfer to the faster Expo Line, which will take them into downtown. Now, those patrons that are on Line 42 today that want to go to destinations along Martin Luther King or Broadway can do so on Line 40. So they will still have local bus service with destinations in this area if that's what they desire. What we found in looking at the bus lines, particularly Line 42, and later we'll talk about Line 740, is that this particular location, you can see the circle, which indicates the ons and the offs, is really a big turnover spot for this line. If you look at the impacted patrons, we have only the number of people that would be forced to transfer from the line at Western when we're going to break it there is 376. So what that tells us is this area right here is doing all of the work for the ons and offs, where Line 40 will continue to operate. Or they were starting at LAX and working their way through Inglewood and coming up to this location to transfer to the Western bus, where we have Line 207 and our future Line 307. So, or they were doing it at Vermont, where there's an Expo station as well. So the number of people forced to transfer off the bus is fairly low. It's 376 northbound and 457 southbound. Line 740, again, is part of our 40 family on Martin Luther King into downtown on Broadway. It runs along Hawthorne. It starts at the South Bay Galleria. It serves the Metro Green Line station. Then it comes across and up to Crenshaw, up through Inglewood, passing the Inglewood Transit Center. And it turns right today on Martin Luther King. We're going to extend it just up a little ways to Crenshaw and terminate the line there. Again, if patrons desire to go further east along Martin Luther King or along Broadway, they can transfer to Line 40. And again, it was interesting that the number of people that are forced to transfer is fairly low. People that are boarding and alighting along here are doing so because they have destinations along Hawthorne. They don't have destinations in this particular area. And then again, people who are in this area right here, we're getting on and off in this area going into downtown. They'll have the Expo line or they'll have Line 40. Line 30 is part of a little bit bigger package with Line 550 and 305. And we're showing this first is because Line 30 currently operates from East L.A. on 1st Street, down Broadway, and then out Pico Boulevard. It terminates at the Pico Rimpaw terminal right here at Pico and San Vicente. Now, currently Line 550 and 305 come up San Vicente. In our package here, we propose making changes to the 550 and 305 so that they will no longer traverse this particular part of San Vicente. So we're proposing to extend select trips on Line 30 and our new line, limited stop Line 330, along Pico Boulevard up San Vicente to West Hollywood like the 550 and the 305 do today. If we were to make the changes we proposed to the 305 and 550, we wouldn't have service here. So we're providing actually a new connection for people from downtown L.A. or East L.A. that come out Pico. They now will have a one-stop ride all the way to Sunset and all the way up to West Hollywood. In our bus rail interface plan, we propose to cancel Line 730, which is our rapid stop. It's a very short line for our Metro Rapid Line. We'll put in Line 330, a limited stop line, which will replace that, and it also will be extended up San Vicente to West Hollywood at Sunset Boulevard. Line 305 is kind of an interesting line because it's paralleled by virtually every piece of it's paralleled by an existing piece of one of our lines. In this particular case, as you can see, if you look down here at the bottom, that's the number of lines that parallel Line 305. Basically, if anyone that's in this particular area can get to a north-south line, which they're generally not that far from a major north-south line, be it Broadway, be it Figueroa Street, or Line 81, be it Main Street, be it Normandy, Arlington, Crenshaw, Western, Vermont, all these north-south lines connect with Pico, which is our red line right here. So they can take that service up to Pico and then transfer to our Pico bus, take the new extension, and get up to West Hollywood that way. This is not necessarily duplicates the Expo line. It does serve the Expo line right here. But as you can see, there's lots of ons and offs along Crenshaw. There's lots of ons and offs along Western, lots of ons and offs along Florence. They're just using that bus in this particular area, in these areas, just to get on and off along these particular areas where we already duplicate ourselves. So instead of duplicating ourselves, we're going to ask people to utilize our existing north-south services and transfer to this new extension that goes up to West Hollywood on San Vicente.
And this is an example as where we were talking about earlier, where we want to develop an integrated network because people are going from different parts of the network to different parts of the network. And we do have that high-frequency grid underneath. It's just that we created this sort of niche market route, so to speak, you know, at one point in time, and it is duplicating all of our grid services.
Line 550 currently operates from San Pedro. It comes up the 110 freeway. It gets off the 110 freeway, which actually is not on this map. It gets off the 110 freeway at Exposition and Flower right here. This is this red line. That's the 110 freeway right there. It then gets off at Exposition, and then it works its way across Exposition where it's going to intersect with the Expo line at three stops, and then it goes north on Western. This is our Western bus where we have line 207 and the new 307 limited stop service. And then it goes right out Venice Boulevard, cuts up San Vicente, duplicates the 305, duplicates our Venice Rapid, line 733 and line 33 local bus right here. Here it duplicates our Silver Line and our 450X right here. Again, this is another niche market where people are using it to zigzag across town, where actually they could, along here, transfer to the Expo Line. They could use any of the north-south services to get up to Pico to, again, go out San Vicente. Now, what we're proposing for Line 550, which again is along the Harbor Transitway. It starts on the east side of San Pedro, comes up through the Artesia Transit Center. We received a lot of public comment about this line at our public hearings and through our written comments. So what we're proposing is actually they would like still to have service provided up to Expo Park on line 550, and that's why this little red line ends right here at Vermont. They would like to be able to express themselves up to the Expo line from San Pedro and still have that connection to the USC Expo corridor in this area. So based on what we heard through public testimony, we still plan to operate 550, but it will be truncated right here. At that point, they can transfer to the Expo services or to a Western bus to get up to Pico to go out to West Hollywood if that's where they used to go. And as you can see, the ons and offs along San Vicente are not that great. We do have the ons and offs here at our Expo stations. Vermont will have a station, and at Western will have a station, so they'll still have that connection. Line 102 is our Expo Boulevard service, which operates on top of the Expo line over as far as Crenshaw, and then, as you can see, it's duplicated and traversed by a number of lines. This little pink line around here are dash services that are running around in the Crenshaw King corridor. We have the dash Crenshaw and the dash King East all operating in this area. Then we have our Expo line operating in this area. We also have the Jefferson bus, which is just north of there in this area, line 38. In the downtown area, though, we didn't have a duplicative service, which is right along here. So what we proposed doing was extending our line 200, which is our Alvarado line, which comes down to the Expo Park area, extending it further east along Jefferson and over to Vernon Yard right here. And that would allow people in this particular area who may travel on the Expo line over to this area will still have access over to our services that go further south into Huntington Park along Pacific Avenue right here, connecting with the 105, the 705 on Vernon, or the 60 or the 760, which operates along Pacific Avenue in this area, as well as connecting to our central bus or a Broadway bus, which duplicates this particular service in here. And then, again, as you can see with the bubbles, we duplicate ourselves on Florence, and then we duplicate ourselves as well as in this area in Huntington Park to its current terminal. So this particular area of Line 102 is covered by our own existing services. We wanted to make sure that the people didn't lose connectivity to this particular area. It's very high employment. We wanted to keep service along Jefferson, and that's why the 200 line will be extended over here. And actually, the 200 line is an extremely busy line, and I think the patronage, which is the working class folks that live along here that need to get over to this industrial area, will for the first time have a one-seat ride over to the Vernon warehouse districts and different businesses that are in this area. So I think it's a benefit for our patrons on Line 200. And this shows in better detail how the bus is going to, the 200 is going to be extended. We'll still have trips going down to Martin Luther King, and then we'll have select trips going across here to Vernon Yard. Our Line 439 line bus is actually an implementation of what was previously proposed and approved by our councils last time we had schedule changes. Last time we had schedule changes, we proposed eliminating Line 439, which operates from downtown L.A. out the 10 freeway to our Washington Fairfax Transit Hub, and then goes down to the Culver City Transit Center along La Cienega and Slauson in this area. We had proposed eliminating the line completely 6 months ago. The council asked us, based again on public input, that we maintain the line to downtown Los Angeles only in the morning and the afternoon peaks until the expo line opens. So we're bringing this back now because the expo line is going to open, and we want to implement what was decided six months ago by the service council. So what we're proposing is to maintain service in this area. This particular area right here is extremely hilly. There's no transit service. In fact, there's only oil wells when you go along La Cienega in this particular area. We're proposing to eliminate the downtown portion and extend Line 217 down Fairfax, select trips all the way down to Fox Hills Transit Center this way. So people all the way up from Hollywood will have a one-seat ride all the way down to the Fox Hills Transit Center. Maintain the service that the Service Council asked us to maintain.
And this one, this proposal in concert with the other proposal where we would shorten the service on Hollywood Boulevard, kind of helps to offset each other in terms of on-time performance, because we are adding additional mileage on this route. But by reducing the mileage up top on the northern end, we can better balance that in terms of on-time performance.
So the people that are currently in this particular area will transfer right at this blue line right here to the Expo station, which is the La Cienega Jefferson station. And this shows in a little bit better, less busy detail how that would work. Right here's your Expo station, and then this is the piece that goes over to the Fox Hills Transit Center today, along La Cienega and then across Sentinel and across that way. And that ends the presentation.
Appreciate the presentation. We do have some public input as well, and I think a lot of information has been put forward that certainly indicates a lot of thought went into the, yeah, I could say cuts, but I'd also probably think it might be more appropriate to say adjustments, that there are cuts, there are also segments that have been added. Certainly, as in many cases, there will be changes that are probably a little bit adverse. It seems like the coverage is still there. You probably have some people picking up a few transfers, which certainly is an inconvenience. But in some cases, there have been really been some opportunities that have been taken to eliminate transfers as well. I'll ask the committee if there are any questions before we have public input. Kimberly Richards, followed by Eric Roman, followed by Esperanza Martinez, followed by Gerard Wright. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Director Wilson. Kimberly Richards, in my capacity as a governance council member for Metro San Fernando Valley. I was a participant on the Blue Ribbon Committee that developed the service policies that this service change, as staff has pointed out, was based upon. I also participated in two of the six public hearings, the one held here in this boardroom and the one for the San Fernando Valley. In fact, I feel like I've been through the presentation for the service change a second time this afternoon. It is my belief that staff has done an excellent job in creating a service change program that was consistent with the guidelines that were given them by the Blue Ribbon Committee. They have also been responsible in pulling away from this program a number of proposals that needed additional work or simply would not work. And I would urge the board to allow this to move forward to the board. I don't think you're going to be able to do anything with only two members. It's going to have to go to the entire board. But I would like to commend staff. They've done their job properly in the service change program. So let it go as it is, please.
Thank you. Eric Roman, followed followed by Esperanza.
That's fine.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Esperanza Martinez, and I'm lead organizer with the Bus Riders Union. Welcome, Director Wilson, and welcome back. And we appreciate the series of questions that you posed today. It's quite refreshing. So just a few things. We want to urge this committee to, send the motion forward without actually giving a recommendation of approval. Clearly, there are a lot of questions that you posed, Mr. Wilson, that we don't often hear being posed to staff. We actually have charts that we've developed ourselves that break down all of the key locations that these bus stops hit that we can send to you. This agency is about to undergo federal investigation by the Federal Transit Administration. Contrary to what staff is saying, this is a rare thing. This is a full-blown on-site compliance review. So we really urge you to tread with caution as you attempt to approve this set of cuts that could eliminate civil rights remedies from the BRU's consent decree that this agency, we had hoped, would be committed to uphold post the sunsetting on the consent decree. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Eric Roman from the Bus Riders Union. Director Wilson, we very much appreciate your line of questions. A couple things to note quickly. One is that what you're being asked to rubber stamp today is only a significant package, but still only a significant portion, but still only a portion of a larger set of cuts, many of which don't need any board approval. Ultimately amounting to potentially as much as a $582,000 over the reduction in service hours, 8% total over the next fiscal year. This is a massive blow for bus riders, right? Our staff, including myself personally, has ridden many of the lines that are being either cut or truncated. Right. What staff is referring to as the duplication or reductions for the sake of efficiency translates for people who ride these lines into 2, 3, 4 transfers where previously they could take one bus that's extra time, that's significantly longer travel times, more fares paid. The impacts are, again, very significant. You will now be under federal investigation by the FTA specifically for having already reduced a large amount of bus service. If you continue down this road by approving these cuts and allowing the staff to move forward with other cuts, the result will be potentially exacerbating the civil rights crisis you've walked into by reversing the gains of the consent decree. We ask you to tread very carefully and not to approve the motion before you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have any comments?
Okay, we have the presentation that's been given by staff. Are there further questions by members of the committee? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we move this forward to the Board of Directors. However, there are some issues that... Hold on, let me get my mic. I would move that we move this forward to the Board of Directors. However, there are some issues that came up. I'd like to have the staff be prepared to, at the board meeting, talk about the transfers, the delays, and the transit dependency part of the questions that I asked earlier.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is that without recommendation then, or is it with recommendation but you have questions that you still want?
Well, yes. I think the questions could be answered. I'm hopeful they can. So does it really matter whether it's with or without recommendation? I think we just want to move forward on and vote on it and then let the body decide, whether they want to approve it or not.
Okay. Additional discussion? I'll just again thank staff for their presentation of the information. Director Wilson, I thought your questions were outstanding.
Thank you.
And I think we did receive a lot of useful information, too, which explained the thought behind this process and here's what was brought forward. Are there any objections to the motion? So ordered. Let's move to item 5, which is the motion, Director Antonovich's motion on super low and zero emission buses.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask John Drayton, who is our manager of our technology aspects of our buses, to make a brief presentation about our plans for reaching the ultimate goal of having a zero-emission bus fleet. Okay.
Thank you. I'm John Drayton. I manage the Vehicle Technology Department.